So you can go to Matthew chapter 13. That's where we're going to pick up. But we have already seen in looking at the difficulties that Jesus Christ encountered in his life and in his ministry, records that showed that he had threats to his life, he had accusations that he was possessed, that he was a phony, that he was a blasphemer. He was always challenged about who he was. You know, when he got baptized in the Jordan, the Spirit came down like a dove, and a voice out of the cloud said, "This is my Son in whom I am well pleased." And the first attack that the devil threw at Jesus Christ, he said, "You know, if you're really the Son of God," and that seems to be a continuing theme throughout the Gospels, that he was always questioned about who he was. And we're going to see some of that tonight. And then he was asked to prove who he was. Even his family and friends and relatives at times doubted him. Last time we looked at Jesus Christ, he was healing the woman with the issue of blood and then Jairus' daughter. And he raised her from the dead. And he was laughed to scorn. You know, he was going there and they said, "She's dead." And he said, "She's not dead, she just sleepeth." And they laughed him to scorn, they mocked him. So he did heal her, raised her up. And then we're going to pick up after that. Now, the record in Matthew is not chronological, so it doesn't follow here from, we'll see it in Mark, I believe, or Luke, where, you know, it follows right after the healing of Jairus' daughter. But we're going to start here, and we're going to start in chapter 13, verse 54. It says, "And when he was come into his own country, he taught them in their synagogue, insomuch that they were astonished, and said, Whence hath this man this wisdom and these mighty works?" So, his own country is the word patria, which means fatherland or native land. In this instance, it would have to be he returned to Nazareth. And so, what do they say? You know, what's going on here? They said, "When hath this man this wisdom, these mighty works? Is not this the carpenter's son? Is not his mother called Mary, and his brethren, James and Joseph and Simon and Judas, and his sisters? Are they not all with us? Whence then hath this man all these things?" You know, first of all, they thought that Jesus Christ was an illegitimate child. So, you know, right off the bat, they had this bias, this prejudice. And then, how could a carpenter's son be so eloquent? How could a carpenter's son know the scriptures and the law, and you know, he wasn't educated formally. How could he know all this stuff? So they questioned that. Then, you know, he's talked about his mother and his brothers and his sisters. And then it says in verse 57, "And they were offended in him. But Jesus said unto them, A prophet is not without honor, save in his own country and his own house. And he did not many mighty works there because of their unbelief." So the word offended is the word scandalizo. Mm-hmm. We get the word scandal in English, but in Greek it didn't mean that. It meant originally to lay a trap for. We'll get into it more in the next record, which is Mark 6. But it says he did no mighty works there because of their unbelief. And that's another thing that he continually had to deal with, was unbelief, as we're going to see more of. So let's go to Mark chapter 6. And we're going to start in verse 1. "And he went out from thence and..." You know, if you read right above in verse 43 of chapter 5, and he charged them straightly that no man should know it and commanded that something should be given her to eat, referring to Jairus' daughter. So he did the healing of Jairus' daughter, and he went out from thence. He left that city, and he came to his own country, his native land, same word again, and his disciples follow him. And when the Sabbath day was come, he began to teach in the synagogue. Now, remember the first time, this is the second time he teaches in the synagogue of Nazareth. The first time is when they took him bodily out and were going to throw him off the cliff. And yet he went back a second time. Pretty interesting. He could have only done that if God told him to do that. So he went to the synagogue, and many hearing him were astonished, saying, "From whence hath this man these things? And what wisdom is this which is given unto him, that even such mighty works are wrought by his hands?" They had heard. They knew of the mighty works that he had done. "Is not this the carpenter?" You know, now Matthew says, "Is not the carpenter's son?" Here it says, "Is not this the carpenter?" So apparently when he was a young man, before he left, he worked with his father as a carpenter. "The son of Mary, the brother of James and Joseph and Judah and Simon, and are not his sisters here with us?" And they were offended at him. The word scandalizo, again, to ensnare. We're going to look at this word a couple of places. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 8. Stella, stop that. Okay, 1 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 13. "Wherefore, if meat make my brother to offend, I will eat no flesh, while the world standeth, lest I make my brother to offend." That's the word scandalizo. And it means to be like a stumbling block. You know, it literally means to ensnare, but it means, you know, it could cause you to not do, you know, not believe or not participate. Let's go to Romans chapter 14. It says, "It is good neither to eat flesh, nor to drink wine, nor anything whereby thy brother stumbleth, or is offended, or is made weak." So the context here is, you know, we're supposed to walk in love and not do things that cause other people to be offended. And of course, one of the things that they had a problem with was, because in some of the churches there were Jews and Christians or Gentiles that had gotten born again, and the Gentiles didn't have those dietary laws. So they would eat, and then the people of Jewish background would get offended. Or, you know, it would be a stumbling block. It would hold them back from embracing these people fully as brothers in Christ. In verse 13, it says, "Let us not therefore judge one another anymore, but judge this rather, that no man put a stumbling block or an occasion to fall in his brother's way." The word stumbling block is that word scandalizo. The noun is scandalone, originally used as the name of the part of the trap or snare to which the bait is attached. So then referred to as a trap or a snare. In the New Testament, these words are used metaphorically of anything that arouses prejudice, hate, or becomes a hindrance to others or causes them to fall away. Okay? So let's go to Romans chapter 11 and verse 9. It says, "And David saith, Let their table be made a snare and a trap and a stumbling block and a recompense unto them. Let their eyes be darkened that they may not see and bow down their back alway." So he says, you know, let their table be a snare and a trap, a stumbling block. And in verse chapter 9, verse 33, it says, as it is written, behold, and this is from the Old Testament, Isaiah. It says, as it is written, behold, I lay in Zion a stumbling block, a rock of offense, and whosoever believeth on him shall not be ashamed. It was a stumbling block for the Jews to believe. In the Working Translation, page 232, Walter Cummins says, a stumbling stone and rock of offense. The phrase may be rendered a stone for stumbling, a stumbling obstacle, and a rock for a stumbling block. Stumbling obstacle is the word proskome, and stumbling block is scandalon. These two words are synonymous. So let's go back to Mark. Just so you get a little feeling for that word. They were offended. They said, what's going on here? This guy is a carpenter. He's of illegitimate birth. His family is, they're on the wrong side of the tracks. But Jesus said unto them, a prophet is not without honor, but in his own country and among his own kin and in his own house. And we saw how even his relatives and his neighbors, gave him a hard time. And he could there do no mighty works, save that he laid his hands upon a few sick folk and healed them. And he marveled because of their unbelief. And he went round about the villages teaching. He marveled. He was amazed. He was astonished at their unbelief. They knew of the things that he did, the healings. He taught the word like they had never heard before with authority, and they didn't believe. He was amazed. He was astonished at their unbelief. Even the people who had known him and relatives and neighbors, Jesus Christ, was a stumbling block. They could not get past his so-called father, his mother, his family, who he was. They just couldn't get past it. After leaving Nazareth, Jesus Christ and his 12 apostles continued to travel around through the area, the towns and villages of Galilee, preaching the gospel of the kingdom and healing every sickness and every disease among the people. It says that in Matthew 9:33. After this, Jesus Christ sends out the apostles two by two. We're not going to read that because it doesn't pertain to us. But now we're going to go to Luke chapter 9. Luke chapter 9, verse 7. So, he's ascending in the beginning of the chapter is when he sends out the 12 apostles. It says in verse 6, and they departed and went through the towns, preaching the gospel and healing everywhere. Now, Herod the Tetrarch heard of all that was done by him, by Jesus Christ, and he was perplexed because that it was said of some that John was risen from the dead. Because John the Baptist had been beheaded by Herod the Tetrarch. And of some that Elias had appeared, and of others that one of the old prophets was risen again. And Herod said, John I have beheaded, but who is this, and of whom I hear such things? And he decided to see him. So he was very interested in what was going on here with Jesus Christ. Let's go to Mark chapter 6 again. Chapter 6, verse 14. And King Herod heard of him, for his name was spread abroad. And he said, that John the Baptist was risen from the dead, and therefore mighty works do show forth themselves of him, in him. Others said it is Elias, which is Elijah. And others said that it is a prophet or one of the prophets. But then Herod heard thereof, he said, it is John whom I beheaded, he is risen from the dead. For Herod himself had sent forth and laid hold upon John and bound him in prison for Herodias' sake, his brother Philip's wife, for he had married her. For John had said unto Herod, It is not lawful for thee to have thy brother's wife. Therefore Herodias had a quarrel against him, against John the Baptist, and would have killed him, but she could not. For Herod feared John, knowing that he was a just man and holy, and observed him. And when he heard him, he did many things and heard him gladly. And when a convenient day was come, that Herod on his birthday made a supper to his lords and high captains and chief estates of Galilee. And when the daughter of the said Herodias came in and danced and pleased Herod and them that sat with him, the king said unto the damsel, Ask of me whatsoever thou wilt, and I will give it to thee. He probably was drunk. I mean, you know,
yeah,
to make that kind of offer. And he sware unto her, Whatsoever thou shalt ask of me, I will give it thee unto half my kingdom. Well, he is definitely out of his mind. And she went forth and said to her mother, What shall I ask? And she said, The head of John the Baptist. And she came in straightway with haste unto the king and asked, saying, I will that thou give me by and by in a charger the head of John the Baptist. A charger, I looked that up because I didn't know what it was. It's just a wooden plank or a wooden bowl. They call them chargers. And the king was exceeding sorry, yet for his oath's sake and for their sakes which sat with him, he would not reject her. And immediately the king sent an executioner and commanded his head to be brought, and he went and beheaded him in the prison, and brought his head in a charger and gave it to the damsel, and the damsel gave it to her mother. I wonder what she did with it. And when his disciples heard of it, they came and took up his corpse and laid it in a tomb. So that's what happened to John the Baptist. So let's go to Matthew chapter 14 again. Chapter 14, and we'll pick it up in verse 13. And when Jesus heard of it, you know, and that's previous verse, his disciples came and took up the body and buried it and went and told Jesus. And when Jesus heard it, he departed thence by ship into a desert place apart. And when the people heard thereof, they followed him on foot out of the cities. See, he heard what had happened to John the Baptist. And, you know, they went and told Jesus Christ. And so what did he do? He wanted to go off in a quiet place in the desert. But the people followed him. And Jesus went forth and saw a great multitude and was moved with compassion toward them, and he healed their sick. Wow. Pretty crazy. He healed their sick. And when it was evening, his disciples came to him, saying, This is a desert place, and the time is now past. Send the multitudes away that they may go into the villages and buy themselves victuals. But Jesus said unto them, They need not depart, give ye them to eat. And they said unto him, We have here but 5 loaves and 2 fishes. And he said, Bring them hither to me. And he commanded the multitude to sit down on the grass, and took 5 loaves and 2 fishes, and looking up into heaven, he blessed and brake, and gave the loaves to his disciples, and the disciples to the multitude. And they did all eat and were filled, and they took up the fragments that remained, 12 baskets full, and they that had eaten were about 5,000 men beside women and children. So Jesus Christ heard about John's death, and he stopped what he was doing, and he decided to go off into a quiet place with his, you know, his disciples and apostles. And he left, and they went to a desert place, a solitary place, you know, that was, you know, away from the towns and the busy times and stuff. So let's go back to Mark chapter 6. A lot of back and forth in this one here. Mark 6 and verse 30. And the apostles gathered themselves together unto Jesus and told him all things, both that they had done and what they had taught. You know, they came back from when he sent them out by twos. And he said, come ye yourselves apart into a desert place and rest a while, for there were many coming and going. They had no leisure so much as to eat. You know, they were busy. He was busy. And then he hears about John, the apostles comes back. So he says, okay, let's go get away from all this and take a break. And they departed into a desert place by ship privately. And the people saw them departing, and many knew him, and ran afoot thither out of all the cities, and out went them, and came together unto him. And Jesus, when he came out, saw much people. Now, you know, this is kind of interesting, because apparently they could maybe see him on the lake or Sea of Galilee, and they were running on the ground. Now, you know, you can go a lot faster on the ground than you can in a boat. Boats don't go that fast. And in those days, they went by sail or they rowed. So they didn't go that fast at all. So you could go a lot faster on land. So they knew the direction he was going, and they just went on foot and met him when he got there. And Jesus, when he came out, saw much people and was moved with compassion toward them, because they were as sheep, not having a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. And when the day was now far spent, his disciples came unto him and said, this is a desert place. And so on and so forth. Let's keep reading. The day is far spent. His disciples came unto him and said, this is a desert place. Now the time is far past. Send them away that they may go into the country around about and into the villages to buy themselves bread, for they have nothing to eat. And he answered and said unto them, give them to eat. And they say unto him, shall we go and buy 200 pennyworth of bread and give them to eat? And he saith unto them, how many loaves have ye? Go and see. And when they knew, they say, 5 and 2 fishes. And he commanded them to make all sit down by companies upon the green grass. And they sat down in ranks by hundreds and by fifties. And when he had taken the 5 loaves and 2 fishes, he looked up to heaven and blessed and brake the loaves and gave it to them, to the disciples, to set before them. And the 2 fishes divided he among them. And they did all eat and were filled. And they took up 12 baskets full of fragments and of fishes. And they did eat, the loaves were about 5,000 men. So now let's go to Luke chapter 9. Luke chapter 9, verse 10. It says, and the apostles, when they were returned, told him all they had done. And he took them and went aside privately into a desert place belonging to the city called Bethsaida. And the people, when they knew it, followed him. And he received them and spake unto them of the kingdom of God and healed them that were in need of healing. So, you know, they got off to a quiet, private place, but he didn't have any real time to rest or spend with his apostles. So he taught them, and he healed people. What happened in this desert place is recorded in all 4 Gospels. Jesus and his disciples had departed from Galilee by boat after learning of John's death. To take a break and, you know, it doesn't tell us anything about Jesus Christ or how he felt. I'm sure he felt bad, because he said of John that he was the greatest prophet that ever came. So, and he was a man of God. So I'm sure he felt bad, but he didn't have time. He stopped what he was doing to get off with his apostles, but the people followed him. So, where should we pick up? Let's go to John chapter 6. verse 1. So we know that he had compassion on the people. We know that it had been a long day. These people came, he taught, he healed, and then he didn't want to send them away on an empty stomach. So, John chapter 6, verse 1. After these things, Jesus went over the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias, and a great multitude followed him because they saw his miracles, which he did on them that were diseased. And Jesus went up into the mountain, and there he sat with his disciples. And the Passover, a feast of Jews, was nigh. When Jesus then lifted up his eyes and saw the great company come unto him, he saith unto Philip, when shall we buy bread that these may eat? And this he said to prove him, for he himself knew what he would do. Philip answered, 200 pennyworth of bread is not sufficient for them, that every one of them may take a little. So, you know, the disciples doubted that they could feed him. They said, well, you know, we don't have any food really, and we have 200 pennies, but that's not going to be enough to feed all these thousands of people. Verse 8, one of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, saith unto him, there is a lad here which hath 5 barley loaves and 2 small fishes, but what are they among so many? And Jesus said, make the men sit down. Now there was much grass in this place, so the men sat down in number about 5,000. So we read before it was 5,000 men and women and children. So it was more than that. How many more, we don't know, but we know it was at least 5,000 men plus some women and some children. And Jesus took up the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed to the disciples, and the disciples to them that were set down, and likewise of the fishes as much as they would. When they were filled, he said unto the disciples, gather up the fragments that remain, that nothing be lost. Therefore they gathered them together and filled 12 baskets with the fragments of the 5 barley loaves which remained over and above unto them that had eaten. Then those men that had seen the miracle that Jesus did said, this is of a truth the prophet that should come into the world. That prophet would be that one that Jesus Christ, or that Moses prophesied of, saying, there will be a prophet like unto me. So they recognized that. When Jesus therefore perceived that they would come and take him by force to make him a king, he departed again into a mountain himself alone. So these guys recognized that he was the Messiah, or the one prophesied of, but then they wanted to force him to be the king. They wanted to take things into their own hands. Jesus put aside his grief. He wanted to rest, but he didn't have the chance, and the people came and he had compassion. He didn't want to send them away. But then he had to deal with the apostles saying, well, we don't have enough food, we don't have enough money. And so let's go to Matthew chapter 14. Matthew 14 and verse 18. And it says, bring them hither to me. And he commanded the multitude to sit down on the grass, and took the 5 loaves and 2 fishes, and looking up to heaven, he blessed and brake and gave the loaves to his disciples, and his disciples the multitude, and they did all eat and were filled, and they took up the fragments and remained 12 baskets. And they that had eaten were about 5,000 men besides women and children. And straightway Jesus constrained his disciples to get into a ship and to go before him unto the other side while he sent the multitudes away. Now, those guys that determined that he was that prophet at some point come in, and he recognizes what they want to do. And somehow he gets the multitude to go away, and he goes off by himself. So again, they can't touch him because, you know, he didn't allow him to. It's just like when they wanted to throw him off the cliff. He just walked through the cloud and walked away. So he sent his disciples away in his ship, and he went, sent the multitudes away. And when he sent the multitudes away, verse 23, he went up into the mountain apart to pray. And when the evening was come, he was there alone. So the other gospels confirm the same facts and details. 5,000 men plus women and children were fed with leftovers. Jesus Christ had focused on what his Father wanted him to do. He put aside his grief. He put aside the need to rest and to be with his apostles, and he taught, and people received deliverance and healing. And in spite of the sense knowledge facts, he fed the 5,000. So let's go back to, well, let's continue reading in Matthew. Verse 24, but the ship was now in the midst of the sea, tossed with waves, for the wind was contrary. And in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went unto them walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, it is a spirit. And they cried out for fear. And the word spirit there is not the normal word for spirit. It's the word phantasma, which means a phantom or a ghost, like we would think of. You know, like Casper the Friendly Ghost or right. One of those guys. But straightway Jesus spake unto them, saying, be of good cheer, it is I. Be not afraid. He always said that. Be not afraid. And Peter answering him said, Lord, if it be thou, bid me to come unto thee on the water. And he said, come. And when Peter was come down out of the ship, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw the wind boisterous, he was afraid, and he beginning to sink, he cried, saying, Lord, save me. And immediately Jesus stretched forth his hand and caught him and said unto him, O thou of little faith, wherefore didst thou doubt? And when they were come into the ship, the wind ceased. Then they that were in the ship came and worshipped him, saying, of a truth, thou art the Son of God. Well, again, Jesus Christ had to deal with, you know, unbelief, or thou of little faith. Let's go to John chapter 6 again. John chapter 6 and verse 14. Those men had been seen the miracle that Jesus did, said, this of a truth is that prophet that should come into the world. When Jesus therefore perceived that they would come and take him by force to make him a king, he departed again into a mountain himself alone. And when evening was come, his disciples went down unto the sea and entered into a ship and went over the sea towards Capernaum. And it was now dark, and Jesus was not come to them. And the sea arose by reason of a great wind that blew. Now, it doesn't say a storm. It just says a wind. You know, so that it wasn't raining, or it was just a wind. So when they rowed about 25 or 30 furlongs, they see Jesus walking on the sea and drawing nigh unto the ship, and they were afraid. But he said unto them, it is I, be not afraid. Then they willingly received him into the ship, and immediately the ship was at land whither they went. So in the other record it said, you know, the sea was calm and he got into the ship. And, of course, it tells of Peter. But here it says he got into the ship, it was calm, and then they were at the shore. So Jesus Christ seems to have had to deal with unbelief a lot. They didn't believe him in Nazareth. When he went to Jairus' home, the people that were wailing and screaming didn't believe him. The Pharisees and Sadducees didn't believe him, and at times the apostles didn't believe him. the unbelief of friends, relatives, and family, as well as the scribes, Pharisees, and Sadducees, and sometimes even his disciples and apostles. Let's go to Mark chapter 6. We're not going to be so long tonight, which I'm kind of happy about because I'm running out of gas. Mark chapter 6, verse 47. And when evening was come, the ship was in the midst of the sea, and he was alone on the land. You know, in the beginning of Mark, it says that he went off into a solitary place and there prayed. And there's a number of times in the Gospels where Jesus Christ would just go off by himself and pray, to just get quiet. He would always try to stay locked into God. And when you look at all the crazy things he had to endure and put up with and deal with, he needed to be locked into God. He needed to have that reassurance. He needed to have that comfort that God gave him and that love that God gave him. And when even was come, the ship was in the midst of the sea, and he alone on the land. And he saw them toiling in rowing, for the wind was contrary unto them. Now, I don't know how he saw them. You know, Walter says in his the year of the Lord, what is it? The acceptable year of the Lord. He says it could have been that time of year when there was a full moon. But it was night, but he saw him one way or the other. For the wind was contrary unto them, and about the fourth watch, which is about 3 a.m. in the morning of the night, he came unto them walking on the sea, and he would have passed by them. And when they saw him walking upon the sea, they supposed it had been a spirit or a ghost and cried out. For they all saw him and were troubled, and immediately he talked with them and saith unto them, Be of good cheer, it is I, be not afraid. And he went up unto them into the ship, and the wind ceased, and they were sore amazed in themselves beyond measure and wondered. For they considered not, now this is an interesting verse, for they considered not the miracle of the loaves, for their heart was hardened. You know, he just walked to them on the water. They had totally forgotten about what he had just done with the 5,000 people, and it says their heart was hardened. In other words, they weren't believing. They weren't believing what they had seen or what he had taught them. They just couldn't handle it. But he didn't quit on them. He didn't give up on them. He kept teaching them. He kept bringing them with him. He kept doing what he had to do to prepare them to carry out the ministry later on. But it's kind of interesting. You know, they're in the sea. This is the second time they've been in a boat where the water was really rough, and they're having a tough time. The first time he was asleep, and he wakes up, and they're afraid they're going to die, and he calms the sea. And then this time they're wrong and they can't get where they're going. And he walks to them and they see Peter walk with them, walk out to him. And then it says, and they forgot all about what they had just seen that day. You know, how he had fed the 5,000 plus. It says, and their heart was hardened. That's interesting. So that's where we're going to stop tonight. But, you know, he had to deal with that unbelief. He had to deal with people not believing. He did all those miracles. He did all that teaching, and still people had a hard time believing it. And that's something. But he didn't quit. He didn't stop. He didn't get discouraged. He just kept going because he was doing what God told him to do. It didn't matter, you know, if he didn't see the results in the sense knowledge realm. What mattered is he did what God wanted him to do. It's pretty interesting, pretty amazing. What a great guy. So, Father God, we thank you for this night. We thank you for loving us, for taking care of us, and the great example again of your son, Jesus Christ, and how he so believed in who he was. And if we could just, you know, hold fast to just that one thing of believing who we are, what a difference it would make in our lives, that we were just totally convinced all the time that we are your children and you're always there for us to help us, to bless us, to show us which way to go and what to do. We thank you, God, for that our hearts can be meek and humble to receive your word and to do our best for you every day. And we thank you in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.